This is Nurse of Death, the Lucy Letby story, a gripping true crime podcast that takes you deep into the chilling tale of allegations against Lucy Letby, a seemingly caring and dedicated nurse who harbored a dark secret. Join us as we unravel the twisted journey of a medical professional whose actions sent shockwaves throughout the healthcare community. It's the story of a nurse who went from saving lives to becoming the harbinger of death. This is Nurse of Death, the Lucy Letby story.
This is edition of the show where myself and Stacey are going to go through some of the latest developments in the case and discuss. This is a case that we're continuing to feed to you here on the podcast so you can be completely up to date on the entirety of this, because it's a very, very long, drawn-out court case that is still ongoing. But I want you all to be up to speed because this is just such a twisted one. It's happening in the UK. You're not hearing much about it in the US other than on this podcast and maybe a few other places. But it just goes and goes and goes, and you just keep shaking your head going, how could this person not be guilty?
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer to that is, unless this person, Lucy, literally has the worst luck in humanity ever.
I was going
to
say that. I don't know how, we've mentioned it before that she's the common factor in these babies' deaths. If this is bad luck, I don't know what to say. It's just the evidence is so overwhelming that it's her.
She feels like she'd be a cursed individual if this is not intentional.
I've known people who've had horrible bad luck, but not like this.
Let's get into some of the reporting and we can discuss.
According to reports, Nurse Lucy Letby was assigned a position in a hospital's risk and patient safety office after doctors expressed concerns regarding her suspected involvement in baby deaths. The Countess of Chester Hospital's senior doctors requested that Ms. Letby be removed from frontline duties after the deaths of two triplets in June 2016. Ms. Letby has been charged with 7 counts of murder and 10 counts of attempted murder of babies between 2015 and 2016. The 33-year-old has denied all allegations. As per previous accounts at the Manchester Crown Court, Dr. Stephen Breary, a senior pediatrician and head consultant of the neonatal unit, expressed dissatisfaction with Ms. Letby's continued work on the neonatal unit following the death of one of the babies, referred to as Child P, on June 24, 2016. Dr. Breary testified that he had conducted a staff debrief following the deaths of two babies, Childs O and P, on June 23rd and 24th. He stated that Letby had attended the debriefing and he had asked her how she was feeling. According to Dr. Breary, he had suggested that she take the weekend off to recover from the traumatic events. However, Letby had informed him that she was scheduled to work the following day and seemed unaffected by the events. Dr. Breary expressed concern, given the unit's prior concerns about her and the recent deaths.
It's interesting. They take the weekend off. You're okay. I wonder how early on they really started to recognize that there was something very off with Lucy.
Well, I've had jobs that I love, but if they're going to give me the weekend off, I go screaming out the door with my hair on fire. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine somebody saying, oh, no, I'm going to work. I'm going to work.
Yeah.
That's weird. If they're giving you the weekend off because they think you've had a shit week, why aren't you taking it?
It's disturbing because she seems to be very driven by killing babies. It that's her thing. Like some people like to, on the weekend, go have some drinks, watch some games. She enjoys on the weekend and the weekdays, go into the neonatal unit, inject some air, kill some kids, allegedly. Let's continue on.
He subsequently contacted Karen Rees, the duty executive senior nurse, and expressed his reservations. Dr. Breary explained that he did not want Letby to return to work until the issue was thoroughly investigated. However, Karen Rees had informed him that there was no evidence to support his concerns and that Ms. Letby would continue in her position. Dr. Breary asked her if she was willing to take responsibility for her decision and she agreed. The day after Dr. Breary's request was turned down, another baby, child Q, suffered a collapse and needed resuscitation. Prosecutors claim that on the morning of June 25th, Ms. Letby deliberately injected air and fluid into the child's stomach via a nasogastric tube in an attempt to kill him. During the trial, it was revealed that following child Q's collapse, Ms. Letby was removed from frontline duties and placed on a 3-month secondment in the hospital's risk and patient safety office. The court also heard that she was informed that she would be placed under clinical supervision as part of a unit-wide review. According to an email sent by neonatal manager Arian Powell to all staff members of the neonatal unit, the review and supervision were intended to ensure safe practices, rather than to assign blame or question competency. In a message to a colleague, Ms. Letby expressed frustration about being placed on secondment and stated that the email announcing the move made it seem as though the decision was hers.
Almost interesting that the department they transferred her to was like the risk management unit.
Right?
Like, you're going to go help out and do some desk work and risk management. That just seems like, whoa, this should, if she was thinking like, maybe this is a way you can alter your records because.
Yeah, the irony is just bizarre here. They had to have known that.
Oh, without a doubt.
According to messages presented in court, Ms. Letby had created a timeline of events on the neonatal unit and hoped to gather as much information as possible to protect herself. She messaged a doctor after being informed of a shift change, expressing distress and feeling completely overwhelmed about the reasons behind it. The doctor attempted to reassure her and praised her for doing a perfect job caring for triplets. On September 1st, Ms. Letby attended a meeting with a review panel, and 6 days later, she filed a grievance procedure. As reported in the trial, Ms. Letby had previously told police that it was a coincidence, that her final alleged victim, child Q, had collapsed while under her care. The court heard that the infant had been stable on the evening before the incident, but deteriorated and required breathing support shortly after 9 o'clock a.m. on June 25th. Prosecution lawyer Nick Johnson Casey summarized Ms. Letby's police interview, stating that she denied causing any harm to the child and acknowledged that he had collapsed within minutes of her leaving nursery room 2. However, Ms. Letby contended that the infant had been stable when she left and that she would not have left if that were not the case. Mr. Johnson also noted that she denied deliberately leaving the room to blame other staff for the collapse and injecting air or fluid into child Q's nasogastric tube, stating that it was a coincidence that the infant became unwell when she came on duty. Ms. Letby additionally mentioned that premature babies could deteriorate at any time. The trial is ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know what you do as a parent, knowing that all of this stuff retrospectively, if you lost a child to this monster, it's just, I mean, it's heartbreaking, but it's also mind-blowing that the way that some of the protocols were in the hospital, they didn't want to assign blame. They wanted to try and, maybe there should be a little more blame assigning here, and maybe that would prevent someone like her from continuing her path of terror and always kind of looking the other way. But we live in a society where we're going to assume, you know, that those who are there to care for us aren't going to try and kill us either. So how much oversight do you need? What is too much? How often do we have Lucy Letbys out there? I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if there's more doctors or people in the medical world that do play God more than we are aware of. We only hear about some of them coming out, but I do wonder if there's more out there, that it's just a place that sort of behavior, that sort of compulsion can be hidden probably quite well if one so wanted to.
Well, and it seems like most people who go into that profession are there because they want to help people.
Yeah.
But you always have your jerks and your a-holes that are in that field, and you kind of look around and you go, why are you here? Are you here for the Mercedes? You know, is it for the money? Are you here for fame? I don't know. So there's always those outliers, but very rarely do you hear somebody is actively killing people. They might just have a really bad bedside manner, but they're not killing people.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, you know, I am very intelligent, but not socially intelligent. And yes. I'm totally cool with that. If my doctor is like that, but they are the best at what they do, great. I don't need somebody to pat me on the shoulder and ask me what I had for lunch.
Right.
But then you do have some that are just so narcissistic and so arrogant. And I think the field probably calls to that a little bit as well, the narcissist type people and the God complex type people, certainly along with those who want to do well. And you can have narcissistic people who, you know, and kind of want to do well, but I think it can lead to, you know, other consequences as well with individuals who have those sort of mental or those sort of personality disorders.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really frightening. And we hand ourselves over to those people. You know, if you're unconscious and in an ambulance, they transport you to a hospital. You don't get to choose your doctor. You get who you get.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, Nurse Lucy.
It's just kind of luck of the draw. And I mean, I guess I'd rather be in a system where we actually have those things available. And the odds are hopefully pretty good that you're going to get care. But, you know, at the same point, yeah, these sort of things are out there. Or just incompetence. I mean, there's a lot of that too, where it's just, you know, somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. I remember when my appendix burst, I went into the, I didn't know it had burst yet. I didn't even know it was my appendix. And I went in to the walk-in and I said, I'm having these horribly sharp pains. And he's like, it's probably gas.
Oh.
You know, it's like a 5-hour wait here. Why don't you just go home and, you know, if it's still bad, you know, come on back.
Just fart.
But had I done that, I'd be dead. So I decided I'm going to go to the ER now. That's right down the way. And I thank God I did because they got me in right away. And yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a lot more expensive. It's the ER. But but these are considerations that we have to make in this country, too, in the U.S. of, well, do I really want to spend that kind of money right now? Or do I want to see if it gets worse or maybe die? No.
Right. Well, like, yeah. If dying is on the table, yeah, you go to the ER. And, right.
Well, especially when you don't know it. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be near death, but had I not gotten in, it would have burst and I'd be dead. And I mean, it did burst when I was there with them. The weird thing with me was it was on the wrong side of my body, my appendix. And it's always, and I didn't even know what was going on yet. I was sitting in the like exam room and they had done some x-rays and then the doctor comes back in and he goes, do you mind if I bring some of these students in here with me? I really want to show them. This is really quite astounding. I'm like, whoa. What? Like, and I don't even know what's going on yet. And I'm like they're looking at something. I'm like, and I'm thinking like, oh my God, did they like find some horrible tumor or something? And it's like, your appendix is on the wrong side of your body. Like, okay. Like, I've only seen this like in textbooks.
Well, right. Yeah. You don't hear about that. And especially if somebody's got left side pain, you don't sit there and go, oh, that could be their appendix. You go, no, the appendix is on the right side. So that must be something different.
Yeah. So it did throw everybody off a little bit. But it was a weird moment.
Well, then, I'm glad you're still here.
Yeah. And then they put me on the gurney and then they're like, okay, we're taking you to surgery. Like right now. I'm like, really? Like right now? They're like, yeah, you kind of got to go right now. I'm like, okay. So I remember I Harper was little and she was probably about 5 or 6. So she was like concerned, like what's going on with Dad? So the whole way she rode with me and we sang Ride Like the Wind from Michael McDonald and Christopher Cross. And she does the Michael McDonald part. So I was like, ride like the wind. And she's like, and I've got a long way to go, such a long. It was great. Everyone was like, what are these two people doing? I'm like, I'm going to surgery. And that's literally what we did.
You're just the perfect dad. That's awesome.
So Dad, remember the time he almost died? He was saying Ride Like the Wind.
It's like, well, you know, it's a memory. She'll always remember that song if you had passed away.
Exactly.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
You like the show? Be sure to subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts. If you want to weigh in on anything that we're talking about, we got a phone number for you for that. It's 888-5-KILLER, 888-554-5537. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.